Adversity introduces a man to himself and business. Every struggle is a lesson. Every setback is a sharpening stone. The best businessmen aren't those who avoid hardship, but those who are forged by it. But then I thought about you and I'm thinking, like, your story is just against all odds. Like, I mean, I had a dad in the air conditioning business. He taught me the business. You know, we had a nice life. That's kind of how I started. And I had my own journey. But, like, you had nothing other than heart to build what you build and so fast.
I've never used my background, or I've never used my ethnicity. I've never used my past for an excuse of to execute the results that I gotten. 32 years ago, I was in Mexico. My mom had just passed away, and we me and my brothers were orphans over there. My dad made the decision to leave us and separate us through different aunts and uncles to be able to come to the United States. So me and my brother, I was with one aunt, my brother was with another aunt. My other brother was with another aunt. My dad comes to the United States and just, you know, takes a huge risk on coming over. From that point on forward, I made it for me knowing, like, me going back and recognizing that decision that my dad had to make to just overcome and come to the United States and give us the opportunity to live in this amazing country that we live in. That's when I knew that no matter what, I was never going to use an excuse to execute on what I was going to do.
Okay, so we're going to keep this thing rolling. And I've been excited for this next pair to get together and come up here and talk to you guys. If you saw it on the agenda, you probably thought the same thing. So I don't ever know what's going to actually happen in these situations. I just know whatever it is, it's going to be amazing. So I want to bring up our next guest to come up and speak. Again, over here on this side of the stage, we're going to bring up the legend himself, Mr. Ken Goodrich, and Ishmael Valdez, our influencer. I mean, that was the perfect entrance song for these two, right? Come on. And the timing was right. Probably could have played the clip a little longer. You can't win them all. All right, boys. This is going to be good. I'm excited for it. Thanks, Kenny. Kenny the Flashlight Goodrich. Ugh. Damn, this shit almost slipped out.
What's up, man?
What's up, Kenny? They got some interesting questions for you, Ken.
All right, let's talk about culture.
Let's not talk about that.
Now listen, Ishmael. I think there's a lot, based on what people are telling me, there's a lot of people who want us to get up here and be their monkeys and entertain them. We're not doing that.
Nah.
We're collaborative businessmen. They don't know how much we talk and spend time helping each other. So we're not doing. We're not.
I don't
monkeys.
Think they know the mentorship behind all the conversations that me and you have had throughout the years, all the struggles you got me through too. So I want to talk about those too.
Okay. So listen, I was poking around, reading something yesterday, and I saw this quote, and it reminded me of you. And I'm going to say the quote, then I'm going to ask you a question. Okay.
Talk to me.
Adversity introduces a man to himself in business. Every struggle is a lesson. Every setback is a sharpening stone. The best businessmen aren't those who avoid hardship, but those who are forged by it. And that reminded me of you. When I think about this whole journey, you know, I think most of us who've got to certain levels, we have a certain level of PTSD with the struggle that we've had to learn on the fly and build these businesses without some of the tools and maybe even education that we probably should have had before we started. But then I thought about you and I'm thinking, like, your story is just against all odds. Like, I mean, I had a dad in the air conditioning business. He taught me the business. You know, we had a nice life. That's kind of how I started. And I had my own journey. But, like, you had nothing other than heart to build what you build and so fast. Just tell everybody kind of your story from the beginning, how you overcame the lack of resources to get what you got.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for those words. Look, I've never used my background, or I've never used my ethnicity. I've never used my past for an excuse to execute the results that I gotten. 32 years ago, I was in Mexico. My mom had just passed away, and me and my brothers were orphans over there. My dad made the decision to leave us and separate us through different aunts and uncles to be able to come to the United States. So me and my brother, I was with one aunt, my brother was with another aunt, my other brother was with another aunt. My dad comes to the United States and just, you know, takes a huge risk on coming over. From that point on forward, I made it, for me going back and recognizing that decision that my dad had to make to just overcome and come to the United States and give us the opportunity to live in this amazing country that we live in. That's when I knew that no matter what, I was never going to use an excuse to execute on what I was going to do. So look, I come from Mexico. I was born and raised over there. I come to the United States and get in the trades at the age of 17, working at a supply house. So worked for you guys for about 8 years at a counter, you know, trying to sell you guys American Standard equipment and parts and material and all that. So I was deep in the trades from a young age. And through different relationships of contractors that I was talking to daily and seeing their struggles and talking to them and seeing some of the success stories that were in the industry, that's what caught my eye the most. Being behind the counter and talking to, you know, 200-300 contractors a day, coming in and picking up material and equipment and being curious and having that curious mind. I'm like, how much did you sell that equipment for? Or like, you know, they were picking up and I was seeing the prices and to me, it intrigued me to be able to see every day, you know, Americans coming in here in the supply house and making a good future for themselves. So, I had a very rough past, but I've never used it as an excuse to not execute on what I wanted to do.
Yeah, well, it's an incredible ride, incredible story. You know, me personally, I mean, we can kind of ask the crowd. I personally have never seen a HVAC wholesaler guy ever make the transition as a good contractor. I've never seen it. They try, but I haven't seen it happen. But
I've seen a couple of people try. Never had a successful journey on them. But nobody had that dedication that my dad implemented on us since we were young. So, but yeah, it's a cool story.
You get to this point, and you're like, I'm gonna hang up my own shingle. I'm gonna start my own business. But you had. You'd never been around accounting. You'd never been around marketing. You'd never been around any of that stuff. How'd you pull all that together to get?
You know what? And that, I think that was to my advantage, Ken. Looking back at the ignorance that I had going into the trades and starting a business and working. I worked for some pretty good people throughout my journey. But looking back at the journey and having that ignorance of like, hey, I don't know how to market, but I'm gonna figure it out. And I don't know how to run a business, but I'm gonna figure it out. And just going and having that huge risk, taking that huge risk, not ever showing the other side or not knowing the other side of like, man, the chances of this working out are so slim that I shouldn't even try. Which most people, that's where most people get stuck. It's how do I get started? And the chances of me succeeding are so slim. Why should I even try? And I was so ignorant to those, you know, percentages or success stories that I just put my head down and got to work, man.
You know, I got a story like that too. So, I don't know, I'm 25, 26, start the business. My dad passes away. I'm trying to figure it out. And my first customer was this Greek guy, Greek immigrant, couldn't really read or write, had built the largest taxi cab company in Las Vegas. Multi-millionaire, very successful guy. I'd go do a $250,000 job for him, and he'd give me the checkbook and make me write the check out because he couldn't write. But one thing he said to me, so he came into my office one day, and I was I was trying to bid the Stratosphere HVAC in Las Vegas. Like, I got no business trying to bid the Stratosphere, but I'm going to bid the Stratosphere, right? So I'm working on the plans, and he stops him, and he goes, "You know why you're going to make it in business?" I go, "Why?" He goes, "Because you don't know you can fail." And which is exactly what you're talking about. And by the way, you know, another thing that he told me was, one time I was crying about something. I can't do this, kind of this, can't do that. And, you know, he starts screaming on me, and he says, "Look, you don't understand what you have. You don't understand the tools that you have. You can speak the language. You went to school. You know mathematics, you know this, you know that. You're born here in America, you know everybody. I came here with nothing. And if I had what you have, I would have been a multi-billionaire by now. So get caught up."
The not knowing that I didn't know how to fail, but I don't think I've ever had an option not to fail. Like, my dad instilled that from a young age to us, that, you know, that there was no option of failing. Like, whether we were working for somebody or we were starting or we were going to start something, he always made that clear to us. Like, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right. And if you're going to do it right, you're going to be the best at it. There's no excuses for it.
Right.
And he made that real clear. I could still remember him telling us that from a really, really, really young age. So that was probably one of the best, you know, gifts that I got, was my dad actually instilling those kind of things throughout my journey. So let's talk about mentorship, Ken, because, you know, a lot of people in this industry are looking for mentors and are always asking about mentoring questions. And, you know, I get thousands of DMs and literally thousands of DMs between Facebook and Instagram. And I have two full-time people just working on DMs, answering messages for people that, you know, are always asking for mentoring. What's the one trait that you look for when somebody's asking you to mentor you, they're asking you if you can mentor them? What's the one thing that you're looking for in them that's going to make or break them from being a good mentoree, or, you know, succeeding? Or what's the one thing you look for?
Grit. I look for grit. Like, who's going to get up and get it done? Who's going to make it happen? Like, I don't want to waste my time and my experience on, you know, just having conversations. Like, you know, as a matter of fact, I usually tell everybody, look, I'll work with you, I'll share some ideas, but to the point where you're just having conversations with me, then I'm out. So I'm looking for success stories. You know, I want to help people be successful. I want to share my knowledge and experience and see them thrive. I'm just not in it to have a conversation.
Is that the same thing that you're looking for when you're buying and selling businesses, though? Like, obviously, there's a ton of different, you've bought and sold businesses, you know, throughout your whole life, and you've been probably one of the most successful people in this room, acquiring the businesses. And obviously, when you walk into a company, what's the one thing that you're looking for in the company and in the leader that you say, okay, this is what I want, this one I'm going to grab, or this one I'm going to pass on?
I have not bought many businesses where I brought the leader along. I just haven't. You know, most of the things I bought were underperforming businesses, and I was buying customer bases or a new location or something like that. But what I had to do is I had to put a new management team, and I had to find a manager. And over the years, I think I got pretty good at finding some really top talent, management talent. But, you know, one of the key ingredients kind of goes back to the grit, but it really comes back to how we started this conversation. Like, what kind of adversity have you had in your life that you've overcome?
Sorry for the interruption. To the Point, listeners, have you heard of Rilla? Are you using Rilla yet? If not, are you for Rilla? See what I did there? Rilla is the leading speech analytics software for the trades. It is on a mission to bring physical ride-alongs to an end. You can coach your reps with virtual ride-alongs now. They're 100 times better, faster, and much more efficient than the physical ones. All you got to do is use the Killa Rilla. That's R-I-L-L-A, Rilla.
And I make this joke in some of these forums where I say, like, I like managers with daddy issues. And, you know, because probably I have daddy issues. And I know that when you come from a strong dad and who's demanding and disciplined and, you know, difficult, you're usually a hardened guy that has something to prove, who's really not going to fail, and failure's not an option. You know, in every role that I took, that I sold these companies, every role that I took, and I took a area vice president job or a regional vice president job, or one time I took a president job at ARS, you know, I would never miss my numbers. I did whatever I had to do to miss my numbers because that's innate in me from my upbringing, right? And so I look for those kind of guys and I just give them the routine. And most of the guys that I put in businesses, that they don't come from the trade. So that's how I approach
it. Why is that though? Because there's a ton of firm believers in here that you should raise your leaders from within. And you're saying that you're bringing in your leaders from outside of the industry. Is there a certain, a certain strategy behind that? Or is there something that you're not seeing in the industry that you're seeing outside of the industry? Or what is that? Why do you bring leaders from outside of the industry to come and manage these broken businesses that you're running into?
Well, I would say that up until the last 10 years, there really was not many managers in our industry. You know, it was mom and pop businesses and family businesses and half-assed managers, and there wasn't anybody to choose from or to recruit, so you kind of had to make your own. And then once when I figure out how to make my own, and I have a specific routine how I get them tuned up and running a branch pretty quickly.
Talk about that. What is that routine that you're talking about? What is the mentorship that you're grooming onto these people so you could raise them to be leaders in a broken business that can take it from, you know, losing money or not growing or whatever problem that you saw in the business? What is it that you're doing to structure these people? Because most of the people in here, whether they want to admit it or not, they have a broken leadership problem. They don't have a broken business. There's broken leadership, or they cap out at their leadership and they just ignore it. So what is it that you're doing to be able to groom and mentor these people to fix and drive these businesses forward? Because you've taken broken businesses and made them super fucking profitable, whether it's a year, 2 years, or 5 years, and grown them and sold them. So what is it that you're doing to the people to groom them and mentor them?
Well, let me preface what I'm about to say with this. You know, I have had an opportunity that most of you guys haven't or won't ever have in business, in that I have been involved in every single roll-up that's gone on in the industry since the 90s. And so every time I got involved in those roll-ups, I got to be around more educated people, bigger business, bigger perspectives, and things that I didn't know. And so, which kind of shaped me, that none of us would have got that opportunity to learn that stuff unless they, you know, went back and got their MBA or something like that while they were running their business. And I just had these new, you know, specific trainings, M&A, how to run multi-branch businesses, regional P&Ls, all this stuff that I've had to deal with that most people don't get to. And I'll say, like, the other experiences that I'm constantly trying to learn and pay attention to what's going on around me. And, you know, and to the same point, like, so Gettle, my former company, we have a new CEO, Jake Gress. And, you know, when I think about the way he comes about it, I think, had I understood what he knows and came about it that way, I would have been three times what I've created now. Just because it's more thoughtful, more organized, more focused on efficiency, you know, he's covering all the bases, but he had the education experience to get there. So, but here's what I did. So, I understood, as soon as I started to understand metrics, and understand that how the metrics, I started thinking about the cause and effect of each metrics, and I started to write down cause and effect. This metric is affected by these things. What's the cause? What's the effect? You know, and try to create a whole system around the metrics of the business. and we created a tool that we called the DSC, the Daily Strategic Compass. And it was a set of metrics that set up, you know, any number of things. And, you know, they're all similar that you see on the ServiceTitan dashboard, but we had evolved ones and ones we looked at different than anybody else did in the industry. But it seemed to be, I created it so logical that I could take a pretty green guy in a pretty short period of time, I could get him to understand, like he's flying the airplane with his gauges, and this gauge means that, and that gauge means that, and if that gauge says that, pull up. If that one does that, slow down, or whatever the case is. And so we started with some simple rules like that. And then, you know, to give you an idea, it's, you know, everything's based on your plan. You know, I'm in March, and my, you know, it's March 12th. And, you know, my pro rata calls, book calls is supposed to be this number. It's that number. I'm down. What am I doing about it? What am I doing about it right now? And so then we would have these calls. We still have similar things today, but at Gettle. But we'd have these calls Tuesdays and Fridays. And Tuesdays, we'd have all the managers on the phone. And these would be guys that, you know, like I hire... one of my guys was a former F-16 pilot. You know, other guys, you know, ran big sales organizations for huge printing companies, things like that. But they were all gritty guys who had to win. You know, they just were never going to fail. And so then I'd have these calls. And on the calls, we'd have 1 hour call, and I'd host the call, and I'd say, okay, Tucson, go. And he'd start going through his numbers. We'd be listening, I'd say, stop. Why are you up? Well, I did this and this and this. Okay, did everybody hear that? He did this, this, and this. It's how you're up. Watch this. And I would be giving counsel on, but when this happens, remember, be careful about this and look at these three other things. And so it was a constant learning space twice a week with very focused on these metrics, cause and effect. Pull the lever here, do this when that happens, do this when that happens. And in pretty short order, I was able to get managers up. And I think, you know, in terms of the industry, like I've had multi-branch businesses, other states. My first one was in, well, I guess you can say my first multi-branch business I bought was in 1997. And I had to learn it back then.
Now he's aging himself, by the way.
So that's what I did. I didn't talk about culture much. I didn't talk about HR rules. I didn't really. It's like, how does this machine work? Work the machine. Coach your guys. Lead your guys. I mean, obviously, we talked about how to talk and motivate and, you know, your people. But it wasn't as in-depth as we all talk about culture and things like that now. It was run the machine like this.
You're very systemized. Mm-hmm. So the one thing that people are struggling with right now, and, you know, obviously PE infiltrated our industry in the last 4 or 5 years, and I've had struggles with this, and, you know, I'm sure you had struggles with it. What is it that you're doing specifically to get your employees to show up and actually do their fucking work instead of just showing up for a paycheck? Like, what is it that, like... Is it something that Gettle's doing? Is it something that you're seeing? Because most, whether people want to admit it in here or not, most people are just showing up for a paycheck at your company, okay? And as soon as somebody else pays them more, they're going to go to the other company, right? Not everybody, right? The key people, the people that have access to me and to the owners and CEOs and all that, those are probably the glue in the company, and those are probably people that won't leave you just for a paycheck. But what is it strategically that you're doing or that you've seen work where people aren't just showing up for a paycheck and they're actually driving the business with passion and care?
So I learned this very early on that people just want to be part of something. You know, they want to feel like they're part of something that's good and growing. And, you know, I'm not even really add that they have a future and they just want to feel like they're on a great team and they're having fun and exciting things at work, right? And ultimately, I guess that's culture. But I don't care where I was at in business. Like I've been technically bankrupt several times in my career where, you know, my liabilities exceeded my asset in a big way. And it didn't matter where I was at. I'd get in front of those guys and say, we are the best of the best of the best. We are the best technicians. We are the best installers. And this is how we do it. And this is why we do it. And this is where we're headed. This is where we will be. And I would continue to be the evangelist of the organization. And it didn't matter. Like, I knew that I'm looking at all, and I knew I didn't even have their paychecks. I couldn't even pay their paychecks today. I'm giving them the raw. And I remember, this is a story that would tell you what I look for when I get there. This is probably 2015. I think it's 2015. But Tommy Mello had a grand opening event for his new facility. I think that's what it was, right? And so I go over there, and, you know, he had all his cool stuff. He had his door displays and this and that, and there was people running around. And right then I'm walking in, I'm like, he got it. He hit the tipping point. And the tipping point is when you can build a business and a brand and a team where they've committed. They own that business. They're part of it. His people were running around smiling and happy, and they were all excited getting this party set up and, you know, showing everybody around with such pride. And I went up to Tommy. I said, you remember this moment right here. This is the most pivotal, most important part of business right here, and you're here. And I personally would probably give anything to be right here again. This is the time. You've hit the tipping point. Now, from this point on, you keep this going, and it's, you know, up and to the right. But it's that point. Tell me about when you hit that point.
2018, Christmas party, and everybody. I remember being up on stage, and I remember my daughters being up on stage with me, and we were giving out prizes. And I actually saw joy in people's eyes for the first time. Because from 2015, 16 to 2018, 19 was a fucking grind battle. You get more calls on the board. I need more sales. I need to make payroll. I need to call these vendors and tell them that I can't make payment yet. Like, that was up to 2019. And 2018, 2019, I think it was the Christmas party. And for the first time, it was a couple hundred employees in front of me. And I looked at them, and everywhere I saw, there was joy. There was joy. People were having fun. People were, you know, I was, hey, we're going to do a raffle for a $5,000 or $1,000. We're going to do, and people were actually cheering. When somebody would go up on stage, they would, like, be screaming. And that was probably I could probably remember that. And that's when it all settled in that I had something really, really good at Next Gen going on.
Yeah, so you relate to the Tommy story right then, right? Yeah, that's my favorite time. I've done six businesses, and I look for that time.
Look, let's talk about something that nobody really talks about, Ken. Competition, your competitors, like, what is it that you've learned in the last, 10, 15, 20 years that you've been in the industry? What is it, the good things and the bad things about your competitors? Did you see anything? Can you tell them anything that they should be learning from their competitors, or what's one key advice that you would go back and talk about?
You know, one time I was in the group Airtime 500, and I wanted to get in. I live in Las Vegas. I'm born and raised in Las Vegas, and they work by territories in Airtime 500. And one guy owned all the territories in Vegas, and he was my biggest competitor. And, I'd ask him if I could get a territory, and yeah, we'll get together in a month or so. He just dragged me on. So I said, how am I going to get in this organization? So I called up the office and said, hey, do you have any openings in Phoenix? And they said, yeah, we have openings in Phoenix. So if you had a company in Phoenix, you could join our Airtime 500 group. I said, great. I called up my accountant who happened to work out of Phoenix and said, hey, you know, a business broker, call this guy, called the guy. He got an air conditioning company. I got an $800,000 business right now. I said, I'll see you in a couple hours. I got on a plane. I flew out there. I made him get in front of the guy, and I made the deal. And we bought the business. I bought the business that day. And then the next day, I got on a plane, and I flew to Florida to the Airtime 500 profit day where they bring in the members, and they're like, well, what are you doing here? We said you couldn't join. I go, nope, here's my new business card. I have business in Phoenix now. So I got in the group that way. And so when that happened, this guy was, you know, he thought it was, you know, he was very, he didn't like my creativity. And so I remember him at the first meeting, and he's yelling at the leader of this Airtime 500 group saying, like, you know, he's cheating and he's going to use this stuff in Vegas and blah, blah, blah. And the guy said, and I'm overhearing it, and the guy says, listen, here's what I know about Ken Goodrich. Well, no, he says, you need to quit worrying about Ken Goodrich and work on your own business, because here's what I know about him. He doesn't think about what you do. He doesn't think about you 1 second of the day. All he's focused on is growing his business. And really, that sums up how I've always felt about it. Now, and that said, I tell my team, and I've told my team for 30 years, we don't do anything else that anybody else does. We do it our way. We call it something different. We think about things differently. We're not going down the path of being a Me Too company. So I don't think much about the competition. I just beat them.
Good answer. I take it a little bit different, Ken. I make my competition drive me. I don't ever let my competition, you know, get ahead of me. I find out what Service Champions is doing. I find out what Gettle's doing. I find out what everybody's doing. I find out how they're paying. I find out how they're selling. I find out what the model's doing. And I want to know exactly why they're doing it and how they're doing it and at what pace they're doing it. Because to me, educating myself and knowing that you know, I don't know everything, and the only way I could get ahead of my competition is by, you know, learning what they're doing right and wrong. So I've always, you know, kept a really close eye on Leland, which is one of my, you know, one of the industry icons that we've had in our industry. And he's, just to let you guys know, Leland is 15 minutes away from me at my Orange County locations, which was my headquarters. And for, you know, 7-8 years that we grew Nexion to $100 million in his backyard, I was watching him from afar. I was seeing how he was paying his technicians. I've learned a lot from him, the way he spun the tech turnover. I learned how serious he takes his memberships. And what I did that really helped me out in my journey was I took the time to look at my competitors and travel around the United States. And I've probably been into most of these, you know, $50 million companies and up that when I was a smaller company, because I was always a curious mind. I was always humble enough to know how dumb I was since, you know, at a very young age, and how much more I could learn from, you know, really, really successful people in the industry. So I never took them for granted, and I always, always, always made sure that I was always one step ahead of them. So if they were, you know, if I saw that Leland was, you know, turning on the marketing, what was he turning on? If I saw that, you know, Bell Brothers was doing something else with their plumbing, you know, why were they doing that? And I started questioning everything that they were doing. And my first question to everybody was, my first question I asked to everybody is why. They come up to me and they ask me a question, or if I ask a question, the next question right after that is going to be why. So I took that, that really catapulted me when I opened up myself and I started reaching out to these great industry leaders and started seeing what they were doing right and wrong. And trust me, Leland has a phenomenal business. You know, Jonathan has a phenomenal... They do a couple things good. Not everything that they do is good, though. You know what I'm saying? So I've always kept a curious mind. I think that's what made Nexion.
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads. Capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
You know, Leland was my boss for, like, we both merged into ARS in 97, and he was my boss for 3 years. I know he thinks I'm the worst employee he's ever had, most difficult one for sure. But I will say, you know, I'm with you, like Leland's operation, it's always been pristine and precision. And, you know, where maybe I came at it like I'm going to scorch the earth and take land. I'm a land grab guy. He was a precision efficiency guy, and he built every brick in that business is well placed before he goes on to the next one. So it's just kind of two different methodologies at it. I would say probably in the long run, he wins. In the short run, I make more, you know, hay, you know, more noise. Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, when we were at ARS together, though, I had already acquired some companies in my former company. So they said, hey, can you help us with some acquisitions here and there? And Leland ran the Western region, and I ran the Southwest part of it for him. And so I was doing acquisitions. And, you know, when I sold the business then the first time, I was done. Like, I was just going to live it out. I made a little chunk of money, and I was going to do something different because I'd been it my whole life. And I wanted to try something different. I was 30. So I would... But in the acquisitions, I'm traveling all around the country, and I'm seeing every kind of operation you could see, and they're the best of that time. And I'm, like, getting inspired. I'm like, oh, I should have done that.
Yep.
Oh, I like that. That's how it's supposed to look. And that got me interested again back in the industry. But to your point, a big part of what I've learned and how I've educated myself through the industry is these kind of communities – these events, going to other people's operations. And I'm a big prescriber of getting to these best practice groups. And it's mainly, one, you kind of get the fundamental processes in your hands, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel, and you can implement them. But number two is the community. And the majority of things I've learned is from guys, everybody in this room, and I pay attention. So I don't consider that competition, because I'm not going to my local guys' shops, you know.
Hey guys, I'm gonna go ahead and cut in for a second because we're getting close.
Can I ask him one more question though? Because this is one really good question that people need to hear.
Do I really have a choice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, guys. Ken's probably one of the most successful business owners here, and he's traveled the whole United States looking at businesses inside and out. And there's a lot of things that we all do good in this industry, and everybody can pick up one thing that, you know, NextGen did good and Morris Jenkins does good and Service Champions. But there's also, what do you think is the one thing that they don't do good, Ken? Nobody talks about everybody talks about how Leland, you know, grew his business on memberships and NextGen was on marketing and all that. Like, what's the one thing that you see most businesses do, like, not as good as they should be doing? What's the one common thing that everybody kind of misses in the industry?
Well, I'm just going to stick with the leader. I haven't met many leaders who would do something like I'm going to get in that Airtime 500 group, and I'm getting on an airplane right now, and I'm buying a business so I can be in that group and get the education I need to build my business. It's don't get stuck. There's always an answer. There's always a solution, and you just got to focus in, say, I'm going to find this answer and get it done. I think that's, we can go into some finite details of the HVAC industry, but to me, I just never let anything stop me.
And guys, there's a lot of changes in our industry going on right now. The one thing that you guys got to always realize is that we're fucking operators for a reason, okay? There's one thing that, you know, private equity could come in here and teach us a bunch of things, with, you know, which is a good thing, very good things into our industry. At the end of the day, what separates businesses from a successful business from a shitty business is the drive that the operator has, the vision that he has, the execution, the execution that he has. So don't ever take, your power that you have for granted, okay? You as an operator, CEO, owner, you have the power to change a ton of people's lives. You have the power to mold your business how you want to do it. And that's something that nobody else is going to take that from you, okay? So when you're looking at just numbers will tell you one thing. Your internal gut feeling and that sixth sense that made us, you know, CEOs and successful business owners is what's always going to differentiate yourself from a good business from a bad business, okay?
And I'll say the last thing and we're done. On the way driving here, I'm talking to this guy, a big operator that has business in San Antonio, Dallas, and Houston. And he did a PE deal. And, you know, he was crying about, you know, they don't listen to me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, here's what you need to understand. What we created and the way we had to come about it, most of us in this room, is completely irrational to a classically trained business person, right? They look at it like, what the hell is going on here? But it's our Rube Goldberg machine that we built because we didn't have any resources. We didn't have the education, but we pulled it off. We figured out how to put that together. And I said, so, you know, don't get down on about that because there's no one's going to understand it but us. And I said, you know, I think what you need to do is go talk to them, say, listen, we need to work together. You respect me I'll respect you for what you know. You respect me for what I know. And let's somehow come together and I'll help you dissect my Rube Goldberg machine that I built and take it to the next level. And I think that's the rub that goes on there because, you know, we're special.
Hey, sit back down. We got a couple questions.
Okay.
Chris, you want to go ahead and kick it off?
Thank you, guys. So for me, Chris said to be vulnerable. I'm going to be vulnerable. I come from an SEC industry. I personally raised and managed $1.5 billion. And if you know anything,
you got to turn that on.
So if you know anything about that industry.
Wait, well, I didn't hear the industry.
Okay. I had an SEC registered firm. And so I personally raised and managed $1.5 billion, which if you know about that industry, it made me a stud. And then I sell that business and I come over to this industry 4 years ago, but I really personally got involved like 2 years ago. And my struggle now is I'm feeling like a failure. And so the nice thing about hearing you guys talk about, Ken, you saying you were mathematically bankrupt multiple times. Ishmael, you talking about struggling to make payroll as late as 2018. What were those push-throughs when you were sitting there going, man, I'm smarter than this. How do I get through that? Because that's the piece I'm struggling with.
You know what? I don't think I've ever told this story to anybody, but I remember in 2018 or 19, I was really fucking broke, and I couldn't hit almost payroll, and I still remember because I was in my office and I finally took the fucking initiative and guts to call Ken and tell him, look, man, you know, the business is where it's at. And, you know, I don't know what I don't know, but I'm struggling for cash. And he turns around and he says, well, you got a fleet of vehicles, right? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, most of them are paid off. I made that mistake. Most of them are paid off, by the way. So he's like, well, refinance them. And I didn't know that, okay? So don't sit here and critique me. But I was able to refinance those vans, go to Enterprise, put a loan on them, and I was able to get $154,000 out of the vans when I was like, there was probably like $800 in the payroll account, and you know, there wasn't enough money coming in, and vendors were calling in to get paid and all that. But that pivotal moment that Ken told me about those vans, and I didn't know, I got that money within, I want to say maybe 4 days, and I was able to hit the payroll. I was able to push the business forward. I was able to, that one pivotal moment was what helped me get through that thing. But it was picking up the phone and making that call and putting my pride aside, because me and Ken had history of not, you know, getting along together, was how I got pushed through. I picked up the phone and called him.
And I told you to raise your prices because you're not Walmart.
Yeah.
And he goes, well, how do I get that much? I go, just move your mouth to say the bigger number. And he did it. And he was like, wow, I can't believe it. I'm selling them for 20 now. I was selling for 10.
Yeah.
But here, let me answer your question. Look, I made my greatest gains when I got into the Airtime 500 group because I dedicated myself to that material. I studied it. I went to those meetings. I was front and center every time. I took notes. I made a plan every time I went to those meetings, what I was going to accomplish, who I was going to talk to, you know, certain problems I want to have solved, right? Every single time I dedicated myself, and everybody needs to be in a best practice group. You know, hear these guys talk about Nexstar, Certain Path, Praxis, you know, there's several others, Service Nation, I guess, but, you know, you got to be in a best practice group. You be in a best practice group, and number one, you get the fundamental processes of the business. See, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You have to figure out, you get the scripts for the phone, you get the salesman's compensation plan, you get the text pay plan, you get this and that, all these tools that you can get implemented. And then you get some college interns and maybe a really detailed implementer type, and have them just roll through that stuff, make it yours, get it implemented, and train your business. Now you have a fundamental business running well and solid, and that you understand your machine. And then you start tweaking your machine to make it your machine.
And to add to that, like, you don't have to get to the point where you're not making payroll. You don't have to get to the point where you're like, that's the one thing I want you guys to leave with, is you don't have to get to the point where it's like gets that tough to, because that's what I kind of been noticing about all of us in the trades, is that we get to the point where our back's against the wall so we can start reacting and start asking for help. And that's the one thing I don't, you know, I'm not a firm believer on the best practice groups. I don't believe in any of the shit they say, but that's just me. I rather do things unorthodox. I rather try things my own way and lean on my friends and buddies that have successful businesses. But you know, that's my point of view. That doesn't mean it's right or wrong.
All right, thanks, guys. Well, just so you know, we could have asked more questions, but it's their fault. We all saw that, right? Just, you know, 5 more minutes. All right, just okay, 10 more minutes. So, but these guys, again, they're here for you. Excuse me, they're here for you. So take the time, be selfish with your time, and ask them on breaks, ask them at lunch, ask them in the evening sessions. They are here for you to ask these questions one-on-one. Do not be afraid to do it, right?
Ask pivotal questions too, guys. Like, I don't want you guys to just fucking ask about culture.
Use a mic.
Ask pivotal questions too, guys. I don't want you guys fucking just talking about culture and like, yes, we all get it. That's like, ask good fucking questions. Like, what's the fucking driver? What KPIs do you work on? Like, what is it in it? Like, dude, come up to us and actually intrigue us with the question. Don't, like, I hate repeating myself, honestly. It's getting to a point where every single conference that we go into, everybody wants to talk about the people and how the people drive. We get it. Like, it's not something that somebody just came up with. There's fucking other things that the business needs, and it needs your attention, whether you guys want to see it or not. And there's things that you should be focusing on that you shouldn't. It's not just people, okay? That's all. Like, you don't have to agree with me, but it's not just people.
There we go. All right, hey, let's put our hands together for our guys. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.